Thirdly, we have it to consider in what condition he made all these things, very good, and that to declare his goodness and wisdom. The creature may well be called a large volume, extended and spread out before the eyes of all men, to be seen and read of all. It is certain, if these things, all of them in their orders and harmonies, or any of them in their beings and qualities, were considered in relation to God's majesty, they would teach and instruct both the fool and the wise man in the knowledge of God. How many impressions hath he made in the creatures, which reflect upon any seeing eye the very image of God? To consider of what a vast and huge frame the heavens and the earth are, and yet but one throne to his majesty, the footstool whereof is this earth, wherein vain men erect many palaces, to consider what a multitude of creatures, what variety of fowls in the heaven, and what multiplicity of beasts upon the earth, what hosts, as Moses speaks Genesis 2:1, and yet that none of them all are useless, but all of them have some special ends and purposes they serve, for, so that there is no discord nor disorder, nor superfluity nor want in all this monarchy of the world. All of them conspire together in such a discord, or disagreeing harmony, to one great purpose, to declare the wisdom of him who made everything beautiful in its time, and everything most fit and apposite for the use it was created for, so that the whole earth is full of his goodness. He makes every creature good one to another, to supply one another's necessities, and then, notwithstanding of so many different natures and dispositions between elements, and things composed of them, yet all these contrarieties have such a commixion, and are so moderated by supreme art, that they make up jointly one excellent and sweet harmony or beautiful proportion in the world. Oh, how wise must he be who alone contrived it all! We can do nothing, except we have some pattern or copy before us, but now, upon this ground which God hath laid, man may fancy many superstructures. But when he stretched out the heaven, and laid the foundation of the earth, who, being his counselor, taught him? At whom did his spirit take counsel? Certainly, none of all these things would have entered into the heart of man to consider or contrive, Isaiah 40:12-13. Some ruder spirits do gaze upon the huge and prodigious pieces of the creation, as whales and elephants, and see, but a wise Solomon will go to the school of the ant to learn the wisdom of God, and choose out such a simple and mean creature for the object of his admiration. Certainly, there are wonders in the smallest and most inconsiderable creatures which faith can contemplate. Oh, the curious ingenuity and draft of the finger of God, in the composition of flies, bees, flowers, and sea. Men ordinarily admire more some extraordinary things, but the truth is, the whole course of nature is one continued wonder, and that greater than any of the Lord's works without the line. The straight and regular line of the wisdom of God, who, in one constant course and tenor, hath ordained the actions of all his creatures, comprehends more wonders and mysteries, as the course of the sun, the motion of the sea, the hanging of the earth in the empty place upon nothing. These, we say, are the wonders indeed, and comprehend something in them which all the wonders of Egypt and the wilderness cannot parallel. But it is the stupid security of men, that are only awakened by some new and unusual passages of God's works beyond that straight line of nature. Then, fourthly, look upon the power of God in making all of nothing, which is expressed here in Hebrews 11. There is no artificer but he must have matter, or his art will fail him, and he can do nothing. The mason must have timber and stones laid to his hand, or he cannot build a house. The goldsmith must have gold or silver ere he can make a cup or a ring. Take the most curious and quick inventor of them all, they must have some matter to work upon, or their knowledge is no better than ignorance. All that they can do is, to give some shape or form, or to fashion that in some new model which had a being before. so that, whatever men have done in the world, their works are all made up of those things which appear, and art and skill to form and fashion that excellently which before was in another mold and fashion. But he needs not sit idle for want of materials, because he can make his materials, and therefore, in the beginning he made heaven and earth, not, as they now are, but he made first the matter and substance of this universe, but it was, as yet a root and confused chaos or mass, all in one lump, without difference. But then his majesty shows his wisdom and art, his excellent invention, in the following days of the creation, in ordering and beautifying and forming the world, as it is, and that his power might be the more known, for, how easy is it for him to do all this? There needs no more for it but a word, let it be, and it is. He spake, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. Not a word pronounced, and audibly composed of letters and syllables mistake it not so but a word inwardly formed, as it were, in his infinite spirit. Even the inclination and beck of his will suffices for his great work. Ye see what labor and pains we have in our business, how we toil and sweat about it, what wrestlings and strivings in all things we do, but behold what a great work is done without pain and travail. It is a laborious thing to travel through a parcel of this earth, which is yet but as the point of the universe. It is troublesome to lift or carry a little piece of stone or clay. It is a toil even to look upward and number the stars of heaven. But it was no toil, no difficult thing to his majesty, to stretch out these heavens in such an infinite compass, for as large as the circumference of them is, yet it is, as easy to him to compass them, as it is to us to span a finger length or two. It is no difficulty to him to take up hills and mountains as the dust of the balance, in his hand, and weigh them in scales. Hath he not chained the vast and huge mass of the weighty earth and sea, in the midst of the empty place, without a supporter, without foundations or pillars? He hangeth it on nothing. What is it, I pray you, that supports the clouds? Who is it that binds up their waters in such a way that the clouds are not rent under them, even though there be more abundance of water in them than is in all the rivers and waters round about us? Job 26:7-8. Who is it that restrains and sets bounds to the sea, that the waters thereof, though they roar, yet do not overflow the land, but this Almighty Jehovah, whose decree and commandment is the very compass, the bulwark over which they cannot flow? And all this he doth with more facility than men can speak. If there were a creature that could do all things by speaking, that were a strange power. But yet that creature might be wearied of speaking much. But he speaks, and it is done. His word is a creating word of power, which makes things that are not to be, and there is no wearying of him besides, for he is almighty and cannot faint. But why then did he take 6 days for his work? Might he not with one word of his power have commanded this world to issue out of his omnipotent virtue thus perfect, as it is? What needed all this compass? Why took he 6 days, who in a moment could have done it all with as much facility? Indeed herein the Lord would have us to adore his wisdom as well as his power. He proceeds from more imperfect things to more perfect, from a confused chaos to a beautiful world, from motion to rest, to teach man to walk through this wilderness and valley of tears, this shapeless world, into a more beautiful habitation, through the tossings of time, into an eternal Sabbath of rest, whither their works shall follow them, and they shall rest from their labors. He would teach us to take a steadfast look of his work, and that we should be busied all the days of our pilgrimage and sojourning in the consideration of the glorious characters of God upon the works of his hands. We see that it is but passing looks and glances of God's glory we take in the creatures, but the Lord would have us to make it our work and business all the week through, as it was His to make them. He would in this teach us His loving care of men, who would not create man till He had made for him so glorious a house, replenished with all good things. It had been a darksome and irksome life to have lived in the first chaos without light, but He hath stretched over him the heavens, as His tent, and set lights in them to distinguish times and seasons, and ordain the waters their proper bounds and peculiar channels, and then maketh the earth to bring forth all manner of fruit, and when all is thus disposed, then He creates man. To this God, the Maker of heaven and earth, be glory and praise. Lecture 18. Of Creation. Hebrews 11:3. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Hebrews 1:14. Are they not all ministering spirits, sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? There is nothing more generally known than this, that God at the beginning made the heaven and the earth, and all the host of them, the upper or the celestial, the lower or sublunary world. But yet there is nothing so little believed or laid to heart. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed. It is one of the first articles of the Creed, indeed, Father, Almighty Maker of heaven and earth. But I fear, that creed is not written in the tables of flesh, that is, the heart. There is a twofold mistake among men about the point of believing. Some, and the commoner sort, do think it is no other than simply to know such a thing, and not to question it, to hear it, and not to contradict it, or object against it. Therefore they do flatter themselves in their own eyes, and do account themselves to have faith in God, because they can say over all the articles of their belief. They think the word is true, and they never doubted of it. But, I beseech you, consider how greatly you mistake a main matter of weighty concernment. If you will search it, as, before the Lord, you will find you have no other belief of these things than children used to have, whom you teach to think or say anything. There is no other ground of your not questioning these truths of the gospel, but because you never consider them, and so they pass for current. Do not deceive yourselves, with the heart man believes. It is a heart business, a soul matter, no light and useless opinion, or empty expression, which you have learned from a child. You say, you believe in God, the Maker of heaven and earth, and so say children, who doubt no more of it than you, and yet in sadness they do not retire within their own hearts, to think what and when He is. They do not remember Him in the works of His hands. There is no more remembrance of that true God, than if no such thing were known. So it is among you, you would think we wronged you, if we said, ye believe not that God made the world, and yet certainly, all men have not this faith, whereby they understand truly in their heart, the power and wisdom and goodness of God appearing in it, that is the gift of God, only given to them that shall be saved. If I should say, that you believe not the most common principles of religion, you will think it hard, and yet there is no doubt of it, that the most common truths are least believed. And the reason is plain, because men have learned them by tongue, and there is none that question them, and therefore, very few ever, in sadness and in earnest, consider of them. You say that God made heaven and earth, but how often do ye think on that God? And how often do you think on Him with admiration? Do ye at all wonder at the glory of God when ye gaze on His works? Is not this volume always adversant before your eyes, everything showing and declaring this glorious Maker? Yet who is it that taketh more notice of Him, than if He were not at all? Such is the general stupidity of men, that they never ponder and digest these things in their heart, till their soul receive the stamp of the glory and greatness of the invisible God, which shines most brightly in those things that are visible, and be in some measure transformed in their minds, and conformed to those glorious appearances of Him, which are engraven in great characters in all that do at all appear. There is another mistake peculiar to some, especially the Lord's people, that they think faith is limited to some few particular and more unknown and hidden truths and mysteries of the gospel. Ye think that it is only true believing, to embrace some special gospel truths, which the multitude of people know nothing of, as the tenor of the covenants of grace and works, and see. And for other common principles of God's making and ruling the world, you think that a common thing to believe them. But, saith the apostle, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed. It is that same faith spoken of in the end of the 10th chapter, by which the just shall live. So then, here is a point of saving faith, to believe with the heart in God, the Creator and Father Almighty, to take a view of God's almighty power, and sufficient goodness and infinite wisdom, shining in the fabric of the world, and that with delight and admiration at such a glorious fountain being, to rise up to His majesty by the degrees of His creatures. This is the climbing and aspiring nature of faith. You see how much those saints in the Old Testament were in this, and certainly they had more excellent and beseeming thoughts of God than we. It should make Christians ashamed, that both heathens, who had no other book opened to them but that of nature, did read it more diligently than we, and that the saints of old, who had not such a plain testimony of God, as we now have, did yet learn more out of the book of the creature than we do both out of it and the scriptures. We look on all things with such a careless eye, and do not observe what may be found of God in them. I think, verily, there are many Christians, and ministers of the gospel, who do not ascend into those high and ravishing thoughts of God, in His being and working, as would become even mere naturalists. How little can they speak of His majesty, or think, as it becomes His transcendent glory. There is little in sermons or discourses that holds out any singular admiring thoughts of the deity, but in all these we are, as common and careless, as if He were an idol. It is not in vain that it is expressed thus: through faith we know, that the worlds were framed. For certainly the firm believing and pondering of this one truth would be of great moment and use to a Christian in all his journey. You may observe in what stead it is to the saints in Scripture. This raises up the soul to high thoughts, and suitable conceptions of His glorious name, and so conforms the worship of His majesty unto His excellency. It puts the stamp of divinity upon it, and spiritualizes the thoughts and affections, so as to put a true difference between the true God, and the gods that made not the heavens and the earth. Alas! The worship of many Christians speaks out no diviner or higher object than a creature. It is so cold, so formal and empty, so vain and wandering. There is no more respect testified unto Him than we would give unto some eminent person. You find in the Scripture how the strain of the saints' affections and devotion rises when they take up God in His absolute supremacy above the creatures, and look on Him as the alone fountain of all that is worth the name of perfection in them. A soul in that consideration cannot choose but assign unto Him the most eminent seat in the heart, and gather those affections which are scattered after the creatures into one channel, to pour them out on Him who is all in all, and hath all that which is lovely in the creatures in an eminent degree. Therefore know what you are formed for, to show forth His praise, to gather and take up from the creatures all the fruits of His praise, and offer them up to His majesty. This was the end of man, and this is the end of a Christian. You are made for this, and you were redeemed for this, to read upon the volumes of His works and word, and from thence extract songs of praise to His majesty. as this would be of great moment to the right worshipping of God, and to the exercise of true holiness, so it is most effectual to the establishing of a soul in the confidence of the promises of God. When a soul by faith understands the world was made by God, then it relies with confidence upon that same word of God, as a word of power, and hopes against hope. There are many things in the Christian's way betwixt him and glory, which look as insuperable. Thou art often emptied into nothing, and stripped naked of all encouragements, and there is nothing remaining but the word of God's promises to thee and to the church, which seems contrary to sense and reason. Now, I say, if thou do indeed believe that the world was made by God, then out of all question thou mayest silence all thy fears with this one thought: God created this whole frame out of nothing. He commanded the light to shine out of darkness, then certainly he can give a being to his own promises. Is not his word of promise as sure and effectual as his word of command? This is the grand encouragement of the church, both offered by God, from Isaiah chapter 40, and made use of by his saints, as David, Hezekiah, and see. What is it would disquiet a soul, if it were reposed on this rock of creating power and faithfulness? This would always sound in its ears: faint not, weary not, Jacob, I am God, and none else. The portion of Jacob is not like others. Be it inward or outward difficulties, suppose hell and earth combined together, let all the enemies of a soul, or of the church assemble, here is one for all. The God that made the heaven and the earth can speak, and it is done, command, and it stands fast. He creates peace, and who then can make trouble, when he gives quietness to a nation, or to a person? Almighty power works in saints, and for saints. Let us trust in him. Lecture 19. Of the Creation 0f Man. Genesis 1:26 and 27. And God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, in the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. With Ephesians 4:24. And that ye put on the new man, which, after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. And Hebrews 3:10. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, They do alway err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. While we descend from the meditation of the glory of God shining in the heavens, in sun, moon, and stars, unto the consideration of the Lord's framing of man after this manner, we may fall into admiration with the psalmist, Psalm 8: Lord, what is man that thou art mindful of him? And the son of man, that thou decidest him? It might indeed drown us in wonder, and astonish us, to think what special notice he hath taken of such a creature from the very beginning, and put more respect upon him than upon all the more excellent works of his hands. You find here the creation of man expressed in other terms than were used before. He said, Let there be light, and it was, Let there be dry land, and sea. But it is not such a simple word as that, but let us make man in our image, as if God had called a consultation about it. What? Was there any more difficulty in this than in the rest of his works? Needed he any advisement about his frame and constitution? No, certainly, for there was as great work of power, as curious pieces of art and wisdom, which were instantly done upon his word. He is not a man that he should advise or consult. As there is no difficulty nor impediment in the way of his power, he doth all that he pleases, ad nutum, at his very word or not, so easy are impossibilities to him, so there is nothing hard to his wisdom, no, not but it can loose, nothing so curious or exquisite but he can, as curiously contrive it, as the most common and gross pieces of the creation, and therefore, he is wonderful in counsel, and excellent in working. But ye have here expressed, as it were, a counsel of the Holy and Blessed Trinity about man's creation, to signify to us what peculiar respect he puts upon that creature, and what special notice he takes of us, that of his own free purpose and good pleasure he was to single and choose out man from among all other creatures, for the more eminent demonstration of his glorious attributes of grace, mercy, and justice upon him, and likewise to point out the excellency that God did stamp upon man in his creation beyond the rest of the creatures, as the apostle shows the excellency of Christ above angels, to which of the angels said he at any time, Thou art my son, Hebrews 1:5. So we may say, of which of the creatures said he at any time, Come, let us make them in our image after our likeness. Oh, how should this make us listen to hear, earnest to know what man once was, how magnified of God, and set above the works of his hands? There is a great desire in men to search into their original, and to trace backward the dark footsteps of antiquity, especially, if they be put in expectation of attaining any honorable or memorable extraction. How will men love to hear of the worth of their ancestors? But what a stupidity doth possess the most part, in relation to the high fountain and head of all, that they do not aim so high as Adam, to know the very estate of human nature? Hence it is that the most part of people lie still astonished, or rather stupid and senseless, after this great fall of man, because they never look upward to the place and dignity from whence man did fall. It is certain, you will never rightly understand yourselves or what you are, till ye know first what man was made. You cannot imagine what your present misery is, till you once know what that felicity was in which man was made. Let us make man in our image. Some have called man a little world, a compend of the world, because he hath heaven and earth, as it were married together in him to most remote and distant natures, the dust of the earth, and the immortal spirit, which is called the breath of God, sweetly linked and conjoined together, with a disposition and inclination one to another. The Lord was in this piece of workmanship, as it were to give a narrow and short compend of all his works, and so did associate in one piece with marvelous wisdom, being, living, moving, sense and reason, which are scattered abroad in the other creatures, so that a man carries these wonders about with him, which he admires without him. At his bare and simple word, this huge frame of the world started out of nothing, but in this, he acts the part of a cunning artificer, let us make man. He makes rather than creates, first raises the walls of flesh, builds the house of the body with all its organs, all its rooms, and then he puts in a noble and divine guest to dwell in it. He breathes in it the breath of life. He encloses, as it were, an angel within it, and marries these together in the most admirable union and communion that can be imagined, so that they make up one man. But that which the Lord looks most into in this work, and would have us most to consider, is that image of himself that he did imprint on man. Let us make man in our own image. There was no creature but it had some engravings of God upon it, some curious drafts and lineaments of his power, wisdom, and goodness upon it, and therefore the heavens are said to show forth his glory, and see. But whatever they have, it is but the lower part of that image, some dark shadows and resemblances of him, but that which is the last of his works, he makes it according to his own image, tanquam ab ultima manu. He therein gives out himself to be read and seen of all men as in a glass. Other creatures are made, as it were according to the similitude of his footstep, ad similitudinem vestigii, but man ad similitudinem facii, according to the likeness of his face, in our image, after our likeness. It is true there is only Jesus Christ his Son, who is the brightness of his glory, and the express substantial image of his person, who resembles him perfectly and thoroughly in all properties, so that he is alter idem, another self both in nature, properties, and operations, so like him that he is one with him, so that it is rather an oneness than a likeness. But man he created according to his own image, and gave him to have some likeness to himself, likeness I say, not sameness or oneness. That is high indeed, to be like God. The notion and expression of it imports some strange thing. How could man be like God, who is infinite, incomprehensible, whose glory is not communicable to another? It is true, indeed, in those incommunicable properties he hath not only no equal, but none to liken him. In these he is to be adored, and admired as infinitely transcending all created perfections and conceptions, but yet in others he has been pleased to hold forth himself to be imitated and followed. And that this might be done, he first stamps them upon man in his first molding of him. And if you would know what these are particularly, the Apostle expresses them, in knowledge, Colossians 3:10, in righteousness and true holiness, Ephesians 4:21. This is the image of him who created him, which the Creator stamped on man, that he might seek him, and set him apart for himself to keep communion with him, and to bless him. There is a spirit given to man with a capacity to know and to will, and here is a draft and lineament of God's face which is not engraved on any sensitive creature. It is one of the most noble and excellent operations of life, in which a man is most above beasts, to reflect upon himself and to know himself and his Creator. There are natural instincts given to other things, natural propensions to those things that are convenient to their own nature, but none of them have so much as a capacity to know what they are, or what they have. They cannot frame a notion of him who gave them a being but are only proportionate to the discerning of some sensible things, and can reach no further. He hath limited the eye within colors and light. He hath set a bound to the ear that it cannot act without sounds, and so to every sense he hath assigned its own proper stance, in which it moves. But he teaches man knowledge, and he enlarges the sphere of his understanding beyond visible or sensible things to things invisible, to spirits. And this capacity he has put in the soul, to know all things, and itself among the rest. The eye discerns light, but sees not itself, but he gives a spirit to man to know himself and his God. And then there is a willing power in the soul, by which it diffuses itself towards anything that is conceived as good, the understanding directing, and the will commanding according to its direction, and then the whole faculties and senses obeying such commands, which makes up an excellent draft of the image of God. There was a sweet proportion and harmony in Adam, all was in due place and subordination. The motions of immortal man did begin within. The lamp of reason did shine and give light to it, and till that went before, there was no stirring, no choosing, no refusing, and when reason which was one sparkle of the divine nature, or a ray of God's light reflected into the soul of man, when once that did appear to the discerning of good and evil this power was in the soul, to apply the whole man accordingly, to choose the good and refuse the evil. It had not been a lively resemblance of God to have a power of knowing and willing simply, unless these had been beautified and adorned with supernatural and divine graces of spiritual light and holiness and righteousness. These make up the lively color, and complete the image of God upon the soul.